you should get out more. And when I say you, I mean me. Or us, those of us in the fellowship of the withered hand, where I tend to live in this little cage that I trap myself in my own mind, my own fears, my own will, my own little ego. And often the screens in my life can become part of that little cage when God is saying, no, get out into my world, into my creation, into my kingdom. We're learning how to navigate the blessing and the challenges of technology to enhance our spiritual life instead of being mastered by it. J. Kim quotes David Kennedy, a professor at Stanford, who talks about the irony of the internet, that it offered the promise of a global village. Gosh, you can connect with anybody, anywhere in the world. Amazingly, it could bring us that kind of oneness and togetherness. And yet what it's tending to produce is unprecedented isolationism. And so I'm inviting all of us to make certain commitments. I have quoted from Andy Crouch, his book, The TechWise Family, 10 Tech Commitments. I'll remind you of a couple of them that I'm pursuing. We're designed for a rhythm of work and rest. So 1 hour a day, 1 day a week, 1 week a year, we turn off our devices and worship, feast, play, and rest together. Get out more. Another one, we wake up before our devices do, and they go to bed before we do, so they're not in charge of my day. We aim for no screens before double digits at school and at home. Talk more about how do we bless the young people in our lives and our families in future episodes to come. And then another key is accountability. Spouses or friends have one another's passwords, and parents have total access to children's devices. Now, I'll tell you where we're going to go for the next few weeks. In J. Kim's book, The Analog Christian, he talks about the different dynamics that life online, when we're not navigating it wisely, tend to produce in our lives. And what he finds to be a really remarkable contrast is the presence of the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And here's what he writes. Here's what we need in our day in the digital age: love instead of self-centric despair. Get to that in a minute for today. Joy instead of comparison. Peace instead of content. That leads to contentment. And then patience instead of hurry. Kindness and goodness instead of hostility, leading to a life of resilience. And then faithfulness instead of forgetfulness. Gentleness instead of outrage. Self-control instead of reckless indulgence, which lead to a life of wisdom. So today and tomorrow, we're going to talk about the presence of love. The word for today is love. And the alternative is what Jay calls self-centric despair. So I'm reading from Jay's book now, The Analog Christian. By self-centric, I don't mean self-centered, narcissistic, or arrogant, although all these things can and often are part of our self-centrism. But self-centric persons are not always necessarily full of themselves. While healthy introspection, self-awareness invites us to look inward. In order to live outward, you got to get out more for the sake of others. Self-centrism is an unremitting gaze inward, an inability to see life as anything more than the comparative background to the foreground of our own thoughts and feelings and perception of experiences. You know, people have always been self-centric, but, Jay writes, the digital age has accelerated our journey down this dead-end path. Before the smartphone, most of our waking hours were spent engaging the world around us, tenuously navigating our connection to real people, places, and things in real time. But in the age of the smartphone, at even the slightest hint of discomfort, awkwardness, or boredom, we shift our focus downward and inward, away from the world, got to get out more, and toward the screen. A few years ago, Apple revealed the average iPhone user unlocks their phone 80 times a day. Why? Because Much of life in the real world is uncomfortable, awkward, or boring, so we opt for digital escape. We increasingly prefer and default to worlds of our own making. This is Genesis 3 all over again. Your eyes will be open and you will be like God. I can be God in this little world. Carl Truman suggests the way we engage digital technologies has created a world in which it is increasingly easy to imagine that reality is something we can manipulate according to our own wills and desires, and not something that we necessarily need to conform ourselves to. But the digital world is not the real world. And when I come to the real world and seek to learn to love, then I'm engaging in relationships and situations and moments and experiences in which I must be vulnerable. And that's part of why I say, nobody needs this more than me. It's very easy for me to want to live with a kind of persona that I can curate and craft, but that's always empty and hollow. And I find when I show up just as my real self with my family, with other people, often there is a deep fear that I'm not going to be as lovable or as vibrant or as alive as I want to be. And of course, the reality is that I'm not. And so I will need help. I will need to be willing to be vulnerable. I will need to have my heart broken some by love. C.S. Lewis writes about this in his book, The Four Loves. Now, this is love versus self-centric despair. In words that can still bring tears to the eyes, St. Augustine, in his book, The Confessions, describes the desolation in which the death of his friend, Nebridius, plunged him. Then he draws a moral. This is what comes, he says, of giving one's heart to anything but God. All human beings pass away. Don't let your happiness depend on something you may lose. If love is to be a blessing, not a misery, it must be for only the beloved who will never pass away, that is, for God. And then Lewis goes on to write about how he thinks Augustine is wrong about this, but he understands the appeal. Excellent sense. Don't put your goods in a leaky vessel. Don't spend too much on a house you may be turned out of. There is no one alive who responds more naturally to such canny maxims than I. I am a safety-first creature. Of all arguments against love, none makes so strong an appeal to my nature as careful. This might lead you to suffering. To my nature, my temperament, yes, not to my conscience. When I respond to that appeal, I seem to be 1,000 miles away from Christ. He says, when Augustine wrote those words, it was probably vestiges of an old Stoic philosophy. It's really interesting. There's a book by Robert Roberts and Woods that talks about how the Stoics described as a virtue something called apatheia. And the idea is very much like when I'm online, I want to have a world where I cannot be impacted. I cannot be hurt too much by outer circumstances, including especially other people. And when we come to the world of the New Testament, to the world of Jesus, this is Philippians chapter 2, when Paul's writing about how he's going to send his friend Epaphroditus to the church at Philippi, for he longs for all of you and is distressed, longs for and is distressed because he heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died, but God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but also upon me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I'm all the more eager to send him so that when you see him, you may be glad, and I may have less anxiety. Such a deep care and concern and love, Epaphroditus for the Philippians and Paul for the Philippians and them for him. And there's this vulnerability to it. And although he's already said, for me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. And yet it's kind of striking that when he thinks about the possibility of his friend Epaphroditus dying, that would have been sorrow upon sorrow upon sorrow. We are called to the reality and the vulnerability of love in the real world. I should get out more, where I have to bring all of my weaknesses and my inadequacies and my not being nearly as joyful and magic and love-producing as I wish, but I still have to show up. Lewis again. There is no escape along the lines St. Augustine suggests, nor along any other lines. There is no safe investment. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly be broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even to an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Just keep it right here where you'll always be in charge, one swipe away, one click away. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. The alternative to tragedy, or at least to the risk of tragedy, is damnation. The only place outside heaven where you can be perfectly safe from all the dangers and perturbations of love is hell. So today, get out in the real world and love. I had coffee a few weeks ago with a man named Jim who had lost his first wife to a terminal illness and then began dating another woman, and they got engaged and she was diagnosed with ALS, and he married her knowing what was going to happen, and it was awful. And the story, the depth, the power of his love, his willingness to embrace what he knew was going to be heartbreak was so moving. I talked to a man last week who was in a terrible financial situation, and he got a call from a guy whom he did not even know. I know this guy. He did not. Who said, "What do you need?" And heard his story and sent him a gift for no particular reason at all, except just love. I think about quite recently when I got an email and it was kind of disturbing to me, and immediately I started to put the worst case scenario together in my mind. And then a person in my back seat of my car who knows me really well, who heard me talking about this, said, "You know, why don't you instead begin by giving the gift of believing the best about that other person? Or at least not immediately jumping to the worst." And of course, when I found out about the real situation, which I did then in a real different, much less melodramatic, much less, "Oh man, you know, how righteous I must be in this situation" kind of orientation, it turns out that the situation was way, way better than what I had created in my mind. I think about being on a trip with some people that I loved, and we were on our way home, and I don't know why I do this, but I just thought, "I want to get home by this time, so let's get on the road." No, I don't want to go look at those sites. No, I don't want to deviate there. I don't want to stop here. When I get to the end of my life, what will I have hurried to? What will I have hurried through? It is the thief of this world who comes to destroy and to steal and to kill and to take life away. Jesus says, "I have come that you might have life." Not rushing past people, rushing past moments, rushing past goodness, rushing past the fruit, living this odd, strange, constrained, constricted little life. One moment to the next together with me. Jesus says, you should get out more. The word today is love.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes from John. You can also visit our website, becomenew.com, to access all of our videos there, or subscribe for the emails that go with each video. But my personal favorite way to stay in the loop with Become New is by text. We will send you a text message every morning that we release a new video with the title of that video and just the link to the video. So if you want that, you can text the word BECOME to the number 855-888-0444 and we'll get those messages to you. If you've got a prayer request, there's a group of us who meet each weekday, Monday through Friday, for 1 hour to pray for viewers just like yourself. So you can text or email us your prayer request at 855-888-0444 or at connect@becomenew.com. Remember, the most important thing about your life is the person you become. We'll see you next time.